The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Hey, everyone. I'm Danielle D'Souza Gill. I'll be hosting Dinesh's podcast while he's away on vacation for his anniversary this week. If you're a regular Dinesh D'Souza listener, then you've probably heard me on here before. Since I only substitute for him, I was substituting for him when he went to Israel last year during Christmas time and also this week, which is a lot of fun for me. I regularly host a show on Epic Times called Counterculture, and I really love doing that, but it's always a special treat when I get to join you guys here on this podcast. But the best way you can find out more about me is to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, True Social, Rumble, all the places. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill, and that's where you can find out my content, videos, all those things. But we have a lot of content to get to today. So today we're going to be talking about Biden's dirty laundry. And what do I mean by that? Well, Ashley Biden's diary has been confirmed as real and authentic. We're going to look at some of the statements she wrote. They're pretty disturbing. We're also going to speak with Tara Reid, a former Senate aide who recently hinted at a possible congressional investigation into her sexual harassment allegations against Joe Biden. This has been confirmed. She will be testifying before Congress, according to herself, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Matt Gaetz. We're also going to be talking about the parallels between the Democrat Party and authoritarian regimes. We'll start there when we come right back. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell and MyPillow are launching My Mattress Topper 2.0. Their new 3-inch MyPillow mattress topper is made up of three unique layers. Layer 1, MyPillow patented foam, which provides superior support and durability. Layer 2 is transitional foam, which provides optimal comfort, evenly distributes body weight, and helps relieve pressure points. Layer 3 was a cover made from a special material to keep your body temperature regulated throughout the night. This MyPillow mattress topper is washable and dryable. It's made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. This incredible 3-inch mattress topper is as low as $219.59 with promo code Dinesh. So call 1-800-876-0227. Again, that number is 1-800-876-0227. Or just go to MyPillow.com. But either way, don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
It's a readily observable fact that whenever you give Democrats time and space to come up with helpful ideas, it always ends in plans which are heavy with totalitarian overtones. They can't help themselves. Lock far-left Democrats in a brainstorming session, and what comes out of the process is guaranteed to involve some massive act of government overreach, which necessitates the destruction of our constitutional rights on a national scale. As Democrats and even Biden himself have intoned, no right is absolute. Meaning, they get to pick which rights you can enjoy and under what conditions you may enjoy them. Which is to say, they don't believe in rights at all. This is the guiding philosophy that has informed history's worst tyrants and served as the motivation behind the bloodiest events in the 20th century and consequently all of history. They can't help themselves. Let's look at some examples of the left following their instincts, only to reveal their true jackbooted ideology. Take cancel culture, for example. In its essence, cancel culture is a form of coercion through public humiliation. They force society to disown someone by slandering them for being unacceptable to their norms. They don't allege any real crime, mind you, but they do inflict real punishment. Innocent and very good and brave people have had their lives ruined by this. Many times the offense in question is not even real or factual, but merely based on vague impressions. Public humiliation was used by the Nazis to smear Jewish citizens and incite hatred against them. It was also a key tactic of Mao's Cultural Revolution in the form of struggle sessions. In struggle sessions, people were singled out and forced to wear signs around their necks indicating their crimes. Crimes such as owning property or being an educated doctor. These people were paraded out into the streets and subjected to the derision of citizens, as well as physical and verbal abuse for hours or even days. Nowadays, the internet has made the process of subjecting people to this kind of treatment much more efficient and hygienic for the armies of Biden's youth armchair warriors. Witness the unrelenting campaign of public humiliation being conducted by the group of FBI volunteers known as the Sedition Hunters. This group of faux anons are dedicated to outing January 6thers by broadcasting their names along with deliberately humiliating hashtag nicknames for each of their targets. With every successful FBI raid of a conservative's attic, they openly celebrate the capture of innocent protesters. Their hashtags, along with their carefully chosen name, are calculated to slander every single target as a, quote, seditionist, despite the fact that not a single person has even been charged with sedition. Facts be damned, let's hang this mark of shame around their necks and watch with glee as their lives and the lives of their families get chewed up by a wild-eyed justice system. See, it's like a bad habit they can't shake. Unfortunately for Democrats, the relationship between their ideology and political persecution is not so much casual, but causal. See, it's not actually the case that Democrats become Hitler or become Mao. It's that Hitler and Mao based their ideologies and tactics of manipulation and coercion on the ideology of American Democrats. Scratch a liberal, find a tyrant, as the saying goes. Or, as Dinesh D'Souza, you may have heard of him, said in his 2018 book, Death of a Nation, quote, "The senior Nazis who made the Nuremberg laws, while they were making those laws, they had in the hand the democratic laws of the Jim Crow South. They crossed out the word black, wrote in the word Jew, and they were off to the races. So it's time to stop acting surprised that the party that created the Klan, promotes eugenics, and pushes communism is always on the vanguard in any movement that destroys our liberties. They're Democrats. It's hard-coded into their ideological DNA. That's why they want to subject their most feared political adversary, Donald Trump, to another round of completely delusional criminal proceedings. They want to publicly humiliate him with handcuffs and a perp walk. Then they want to subject him to another kangaroo court before a jury not of his peers, but of theirs. A group of irrational wannabe tyrants. There's no doubt that the charges being contemplated in Manhattan are bogus. Nationally recognized legal scholar Jonathan Turley called this, quote, a patently political prosecution, and compares D.A. Alvin Bragg's case to a Frankenstein monster. It's half dead given that the statute of limitations already ran out and the previous attempts by the feds to prosecute it had to be dropped. But it's also cobbled together from a flimsy interpretation of state and federal codes. According to Turley, quote, he is reportedly going to convert a misdemeanor for falsifying financial records into a prosecution of a federal crime. What's more is that similar attempts at political retribution against Democrat politician John Edwards have previously failed. One need only to come up with a non-campaign related reason behind the use of funds for them to be declared personal and not political. If a lifelong politician and public servant like Edwards could beat these charges, the case of a private billionaire using his own money for his own private purposes is even less scandalous. A successful prosecution would actually spell doom for business, as usual in the swamp, as it would require all politicians to track every dollar spent, regardless if it was campaign-related or not. On the other side of the equation, you have Joe Biden, who every day sinks further and further into the mire of his actual crimes. Since GOP investigators have come up with bank statements showing that not just Joe Biden, but the entire Biden family have been the direct beneficiaries of the Chinese Communist Party to the tune of millions of dollars, the administration has been doing backflips, trying to explain that it's not real, or it doesn't count, or it's not illegal, or nobody knew what was going on. But the fact is, they did know what was going on. Joe Biden knew what was going on. Emails obtained by America First Legal shows not only that then Vice President Joe Biden knew, but he was the force behind the scenes trying to deflect the damage by crafting Hunter's PR and directing journalists to none other than the State Department. So Joe Biden not only uses his position in government to sell us out, he tasks the government itself as his own public relations lackeys when he needs to cover. Meanwhile, China has forged a close alliance with Russia, the very same country that Joe wants to start a nuclear war with. I tell you, it's mystifying how every single person with a unique opinion on Ukraine is slandered as a Putin puppet, while our own commander-in-chief is being directly paid by the only other superpower willing to provide financial and military support to Russia. But in case you haven't noticed, tyrants aren't exactly known for their intellectual integrity or moral consistency. They also aren't known for their brains. By their very sociopathic nature, tyrants lack the capacity to truly understand how people think and feel, which is why this blatantly political prosecution shtick keeps backfiring on them. Since news broke about Trump's impending arrest by the Manhattan DA, his poll numbers actually improved, as they did after the Mar-a-Lago raid. They were hoping to scare we the people into submission. Some mass raids, some kangaroo court trials, where the government breaks more laws than the defendants, and a good dose of public humiliation, and voila, a frightened and easily manipulated citizenry. That doesn't work on us. Ours is a nation of heroes, known for standing up to history's worst monsters. Because we are Americans, and we don't tolerate tyranny. You could say it's an acquired taste. After all, we got our start by shirking off the yoke of British tyranny. Markets go up and come down. Smart investors take advantage of the upside of the market while protecting against the downside. We're in a rocky economy with banks going under, stocks sliding, and Biden at the helm. This is a time to be cautious, not reckless. Dinesh and Debbie have a portion of their savings in gold and precious metals. Why? Because they are the smart hedge against inflation and market downturns. They trust Birch Gold because they have top-notch people to advise them, and they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. If you text Dinesh to 989898, you'll get a free information kit on gold, and then you should talk to Birch Gold about getting started. They offer a free safe to store your physical gold and silver based on qualifying purchases, and they'll also show you how to hold real gold and silver in a tax-sheltered retirement account. With Birch Gold, Dinesh sleeps better at night knowing he's hedged against market volatility. So text Dinesh to 989898 for your free info kit on gold and to claim eligibility for your free home safe by March 31st on qualifying purchases. Again, text Dinesh to 989898. I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Tara Reid. She's an author, actress, former Senate aide, and the host of the Tara Reid podcast. Tara, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Yeah, I'm actually, my podcast is called The Politics of Survival. And it's on every Friday night. So on Rumble and on YouTube. Well, sometimes YouTube, sometimes they pull it down. You know that.
Oh my gosh. Oh no. So you get like some YouTube strikes and violations.
Lately, but yeah, it seemed like it was more frequent earlier this year, and it seems to have calmed down a little bit. But yeah, like everyone, I think Rumble is really great because it just sort of, there's no censorship. So
yes, that is so nice. Mm-hmm. It's crazy too how I'm sure you were just talking about things that shouldn't have been censored, but you know how it is. But yeah, I thought we could get started by maybe you could tell us a little bit about like your earlier years in life. Where did you grow up? Where are you from? Kind of tell us a little bit about you, like pre-becoming a Senate aide.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I wrote about it in my book, Left Out: When the Truth Doesn't Fit In, and you can find that on Amazon or wherever. I wrote a bit about my childhood, but I lived on a farm in Wisconsin when I was a little girl. I was born in the Monterey County, California, so in Salinas. And, you know, I went back there as an adult, actually, to the Monterey area, which is a beautiful area, but very, very expensive. and I loved my years growing up on a Wisconsin farm. I always had an interest in, you know, my family was very political. My mother was an activist and anti-war activist in Vietnam and very committed to that. My father I was pretty much estranged with him after their divorce from 13 on. I didn't see much of him for years at a time. But he was a defense contractor and worked for the Pentagon at one time and was a writer. So he was very different politically than my mother. So very different views. And, you know, I think that's kind of in a way good because I've had a lot of different input of different points of view throughout my life. I went into acting and I was a professional actress from the time, you know, I was very young and enjoyed it, did some modeling. I always did writing as well. I think the first time I was published, I was 16. It was for poetry. So I was very active in the arts. And then I took some political science courses, you know, and also politics were kind of part of our family life. So I was really interested in the internship with Leon Panetta, and I'd worked on a congressional race as a field coordinator. And these were all Democrats that I worked for. And then I had the opportunity to work for Joe Biden. So I had, you know, a pretty full career with acting up until 28. I was really kind of, you know, doing a lot of theater and things like that. And then was interested in politics, but then it took hold when I really got involved working, you know, on an election and then working as an intern and then getting the job with Joe Biden, which was a staffer position.
Yeah. And what kind of inspired you to be interested in politics, to want to be a Senate aide, all of those things from acting?
Well, I mean, with acting, it was fun. But the reality of acting, when I did like a couple of films, like I was in La Bamba, I was just a dancer. I was an extra and then auditioned to be a dancer and then got selected and did a couple of other films as well and walk-on roles. And I loved theater because that was very robust. You got to do things. But with film, it's a lot of sitting around waiting unless you're a lead role. And, you know, I was young and I wanted to be intellectually stimulated. So when I got interested in politics and when I got that job, I kind of wrapped my arms around, you know, the job. It's very hard work, as you know, to work in politics. And I just became very interested in it. And that's why I made the switch. When I had that opportunity to enter with Leon Panetta, I took it and it changed the course of my life. I also had been encouraged when I was younger to maybe look into becoming a politician. And I had dreams, you know, and aspirations when I went to Joe Biden's office of becoming a senator. You know, I didn't have, I didn't have, like, you've heard about people, you know, coming to DC for different reasons. But one of the things that attracted me was the idea of working in a Senate office, being mentored, and then perhaps running for office myself and making a difference. So public service, you know, and that was always really important in my family. And I was really interested in it.
Yeah. And so you went in there with a lot of idealism. You had goals. You wanted to learn new things when you went to work there. So when you got there as a Senate aide, when did things kind of begin to maybe not feel as idealistic or as positive while you were there?
Well, almost right away, unfortunately. You know, and I want to contrast it a little bit to Leon Panetta's office. Leon Panetta's office was very professional. You know, politically, I may not agree with everything he does, but he was very serious minded and he worked very hard and the office was very structured. It was just like what you would expect, a normal, like you're trying to do things for your constituents. And it was a normal working environment. Biden's office was a shock. It wasn't that way at all. It was very top down kind of people were treated not very well, lower staff. I mean, for an example, one of my colleagues who had an advanced degree and worked as a legislative aide was telling the senator, you know, advising him how to vote and like giving him information. He was delegated to drive the limo for Beau Biden and his date for the inaugural events. And he had to do that as a volunteer. He wasn't paid for that. And it's not like, and I mean, that they just kind of treated their staff like minions a lot of times, unless they were on the inside track. And then they were given a lot of favor. So it was a very strange environment. Joe Biden did not seem serious to me. He seemed more, he didn't seem intellectually committed to what he was doing, is what I'm trying to say. And I got that right away. The way he would touch me, I thought was unusual, but remember, this is the 90s. What was tolerated then is very different than what happens now. But even then, it was unusual, and unusual enough for me to call my mother and say, hey, you know, this happened and this happened. And I kept calling her, and she said, you know, she educated me, really, you know, that's not okay. That's sexual harassment. He has power over you and he shouldn't be doing that. You know, because he would put his hands on my shoulder and go underneath my hair. And he asked for me to serve drinks at an event. I don't know what type, but it was, I thought it was a fundraising, but I don't know. But he liked my legs apparently, and thought I was pretty and wanted me to serve drinks. And you know, I wasn't there for that. I was there. I was serious about what I wanted to do. I wanted to learn and I wanted to grow and I wanted to, you know, like I said, I had aspirations of eventually running for office or running an office. I mean, running, you know, like a chief of staff position or running for office myself. I didn't have aspirations of being, you know, dating a senator. I wanted to be one.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And when you kind of started experiencing those uncomfortable things, you said you told your mother and you kind of knew that it was weird. Did you notice that he would kind of treat a lot of women like that? Was it like mostly you? What was kind of, how did you like observe him?
What I noticed about Joe Biden is he treats people like objects. It's like they're in his world. And I felt definitely like I did not feel important. I didn't feel like he was giving me special attention. I felt like he was just, I was just there, an object, like for his amusement, pleasure, whatever it was at that particular moment. He, you know, he's not a very, I know people keep saying how warm and engaging he is. That is not my experience of him. My experience of him is he's, and he also had a very bad temper. So, and we all saw that in staff. And I think in a congressional hearing, if some of those staff members were called, they would have to tell the truth about the real atmosphere of that office.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've seen some of the videos of, you know, him with the Clarence Thomas hearing or other things. And so he definitely does have more of that dark side that isn't just the friendly Joe. So when you were there, how long were you working there?
9 months, approximately.
9 months. Okay. Months,
like, technically. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did that come to an end?
Well, it was after I had filed the sexual harassment with the Senate, and they called it back then the counseling office. They didn't really have a proper name. They didn't really address sexual harassment back then in a protocol way, the way they do now. It's everything has changed like two or three times since that year. But I was given basically an intake form, and they were going to like mediate a counseling session or something. But I filled out the form, and that's what I recall. And it was filed, and then no one ever followed up. When they followed up, I wanted to talk about the sexual assault because this was after it. It was right after that period of time is when my duties were stripped. I wasn't allowed to supervise the interns. I was put in a like an office space where I was told that even if I went to the restroom, I had to call and tell my supervisor where I was going and what I was doing and for how long. And it was very, and they basically said, your job is to look for another job. You're not a good fit. So I was basically forced to resign. And that was coming from the chief of staff. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And when you reported it, did you report like what he did, or is it more kind of like, here is a sexual harassment claim, or kind of how did that work? What did you tell them at the time that they sort of swept under the rug?
I didn't tell them anything. It was an intake form. So it was literally just a written form. I gave probably basic sentences and in hopes that they would call back. And they, also, of course, I was supposed to put down another person's, you know, so I had a cooperating witness and put down her phone number, and she was never called, and I never heard anything after. So nothing.
Wow.
Nothing came of it. My understanding is that it should be sealed in the University of Delaware files if it's there. Although Joe Biden has made it clear that those files are not in the public interest and will not be released.
Wow. Well, it's good that you're speaking up about it because then people can hear from you directly. How did your experience with that sexual harassment affect you throughout life after that work experience?
It definitely impacted me. I mean, I went to the next job that I had. I couldn't get a job on the Hill. I had a baby the next in 1994, my daughter Michaela was born, and I got a job with State Senator Jack O'Connell. And Lorraine Sanchez has already gone on the record and talked about this, but I immediately was really tense. And she was like, look, I told her about, you know, some of what I experienced. And she said, you know, that doesn't happen in this office. And it didn't. I didn't have any of those negative experiences. She said, you know, we don't. So yeah, it definitely, I became very cautious, defensive, if you will. It impacted me immensely because it impacted my self-esteem. I think, you know, some of the things he said to me was very devastating at the time, and it resonated throughout my life. Particularly the sexual assault. It had a deep impact on my life. It took a long, long time to not be completely frightened to talk about it. So I talked about it to a few friends or close family, but like definitely not the media at that time. And I think what really got to me was seeing Lucy Flores torn to pieces, that young politician from Nevada. And when I saw her, media just kind of eviscerating her just because she came forward and said, hey, this wasn't comfortable. She didn't even make that strong of an accusation, but it was creepy, right? He, you know, kissed mm-hmm. the top of her head and he had his hand. She didn't, you know, she was a politician and she's trying to be serious. And it was at once creepy, but also kind of, I don't know. It's like him asserting his power and control again. And again, people need to understand that with sexual harassment and sexual assault, it's not about sex. It's about power and control. And Joe Biden always, because I think he is very, and this is my opinion in total based on what my experienced, but I think he has deep insecurities. And so I think he gets in people's spaces. He does those types of things to exert his power, try to be alpha.
Hmm. Tell us more about, yeah, your experience of Biden in those realms. I think you had mentioned Beau Biden earlier. Did you ever kind of see his family around, or what was his interaction with them?
Oh, I know. I mean, the Hunter Biden was too young at that time. Beau Biden was, I can't remember, but he was in and out like with his father at that time. You know, he was young as well, but, he was old enough to go to like the inaugural balls. Like we were all invited to that for the Clinton thing. But I went to a Christmas party and saw their layout. I met Jill Biden and I'm aware of their dynamics, and their household. It was quite clear, you know, who they were and what mm-hmm. they were about.
Tell us more about that with Jill Biden, because I think, you know, a lot of people don't know about how they kind of began and got together, but you were observing them at that time. Did you find it odd that he was coming on to you, yet Jill Biden was in his life?
You know, I have to tell you, in 1993, you heard a lot of things on the Hill, and my understanding of a lot of what was going on was there was a lot of extracurricular activity, if you will. That was consensual. So it didn't surprise me. His behavior was I thought it was unusual that he would do what he does in front of her. Like I've seen video now, like we all have, of him, some of his behavior. And it is unusual. At the time, you know, at the Christmas party, for instance, there wasn't anything unusual that I saw there. I mean, as far as that goes, you know, I can only speak to my direct experiences regarding Biden. And we were alone when that happened, and she wasn't there. So I have no idea, you know,
the harassment was when you two were alone.
Yeah. It wasn't when he, you know, was in front of his wife. So.
Right. 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 And later on when you kind of looked back at this and then saw that people had a much different understanding of sexual harassment. Is that kind of when you felt like you wanted to speak up more on this issue? Or what kind of led you to share your story more? You mentioned your book and other things like that. What kind of inspired you to talk about it?
Well, I think the fact about the abuse of power is really pivotal, because it ruined my career. My career ended, like whatever career I was going to have, you know, ended with that event, with that sexual assault. Sexual harassment and sexual assault often, unfortunately, leads to the victim losing their career and the perpetrator goes on. In Cuomo's case, for instance, I mean, his career has been sidelined, but he's talking about making a comeback. And, you know, his victims spoke quite clearly about what happened to them. I think, you know, for instance, Lucy Flores, who is the young politician I mentioned, we haven't heard from her since, right? You know, where's her career? How did, you know, her coming forward and being brave and talking about what Joe Biden did and that it wasn't okay, even in this time, and we're talking 2020, at that in 2019 when she came forward, excuse me, you know. So what I would say is that I saw a continuation of this pattern of behavior where it's allowed, even encouraged, and the Democrats use the Me Too movement in a very hypocritical way. They use it when it's convenient for them and toss it when it's not. And that needs to stop. And one of the things my daughter said to me during that time when I was thinking about coming forward, she was an adult, and I said to her, you know, she knew about, you know, what had happened to me. And she said, "Mom, he's too powerful." And when she said that, I thought, oh my gosh, this is generational. This just keeps going generation to generation, where these people in power think that they can get away with anything and there's no consequences. They're above the law. And I think Joe Biden, I mean, I'll give an example. Like recently he was, his mic was on and he didn't know it. And he said, "No one F's with a Biden." That's mafia talk. That's not the president of the United States. But literally that's how these people think. You know, and going back to 1993, when I filed that report, the assistant press secretary under Evelyn Lieberman, he and I were speaking, he knew about it. And he said, "Tara," he said, "we will effing destroy you if you go forward." And that was significant to me because, you know, I'm, you know, a young person, and that's a significant thing to say. He wasn't directly threatening me. Like, he wasn't saying it in a way like menacingly. He was saying it just kind of matter of fact, "We will effing destroy you." Like, that's how they think. And so that really motivated me when I said that, and Lucy Flores motivated me that this has to stop. And people like myself, we have to step forward. We have to be clear.
Yeah, for sure. And what's your reaction when you see like these videos of Biden, you know, touching other girls, sniffing children, just like uncomfortable kind of situations where people move away from him and those things? How do you feel when you see those videos?
I mean, it's not okay to watch. I mean, what I see, for me, it brings back a little bit of him, you know, and I don't like that. But beyond my personal feelings, just looking at it objectively, even if what happened to me hadn't happened, it's inappropriate. It's you know, getting in people's spaces that way, being demonstrative, pushing yourself on someone when they're not necessarily wanting that. It's just not okay. So what I would say is that I see the pattern. I don't know if anyone else does. I'm not an expert in this field, but I definitely see a pattern of his behavior being that he does not think there's any consequences to his behavior. He simply wants that gratification in that moment.
Yeah. And you mentioned his insecurity, things that you feel like lead him to want to assert his power. What kind of gave you the impression that he has issues in that area of dominance, wanting to come across as an alpha male? Those kinds of things, because I also can kind of see that. I mean, even when he would debate Trump, this is obviously just from the outside, I don't know him personally, but when he would debate Trump, he would kind of try to act like he was like super tough or something, like try to act like he was like more than Trump. But then at other times he tries to act like he's super nice, or he's just a grandpa or something. And so maybe just kind of seemed like he had some struggle with that. Whereas Trump, for example, he's kind of himself all the time. He's always Trump. And so that's just his personality. But what about Biden did you kind of get the sense that, you know, this is like his personal like way of asserting himself?
Well, I mean, you can look at video after video of the arrogance. He's arrogant. I mean, when I saw that in 1993, I didn't really see it before then. I should have, because the Clarence Thomas hearings had happened. And then reviewing that, I was like, oh yeah, he's very arrogant. I just thought he was confident, right? In person, he's wants to be the center of attention. He's arrogant. He's not very, I'm just going to say it. In my opinion, he's not very bright. Like, he used to have to be fully schooled on what the legislation was about. If he had just had lunch with Orrin Hatch, he would have voted with Orrin Hatch. I mean, he was not the brightest bulb, and people used to call him a blowhard and things like that. I think because he was easily manipulated, because he took, obviously, you know, benefit from like big pharma, like DuPont was a big supporter of Joe Biden's. I think that shaped a lot of his career, those relationships, and they were able to shape him in return, you know, and unfortunately that's a really dangerous thing. First of all, he shouldn't have been in office that long. I mean, fundamentally, you know, looking back on that now, he's still there now. He's the president, but I mean, Nancy Pelosi, some of these others, even Mitch McConnell, I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican, they're fossilizing in their seats, making millions of dollars. And it's not okay. I don't think our founders have that intent to have people go into public office and stay there and make multi-millions. That wasn't the intent. Mm-hmm. You know, they're supposed to go do their public service and then go back to their districts, go back to their farm, go back to their business, whatever it is, and move on. Instead of hold on to power. So right. I, you know, intellectually, I just think Biden was in it for the power and for the acclaim and attention, and he stayed there and was able to be easily manipulated, in my opinion, which look at where we are now, $100 billion going to Ukraine, right? For weapons, aid.
Right.
And so Raytheon's happening. Lockheed Martin, their profits have soared. Look at Big Pharma. Look at how their profits have soared. You know, manufacturing crisis after crisis for these major corporations. So, I don't have a lot of respect for him. So, obviously. Right.
How do you compare his kind of, you were saying he's not the brightest. He's honestly just, you know, a little bit like, dumb. How do you compare that to the fact that he has these kind of crime rackets going on? He's been in politics so long. I guess you could say he's successful in that he's been around so long. So how do you think he pulled that off with him, his family, and all of that, while also at the same time not being the smartest person?
Well, I don't, you know, remember who's behind him. He has people behind him that you don't see, that are working around his accounts, that are benefiting from his power and benefiting from all that. So, you know,
his family, for sure.
Just my opinion. I particularly don't think he's bright. Like, you would see Leon Panetta, for instance, reading the bills, reading the information. You never saw Joe Biden doing that. He would get briefed. He wouldn't know how to vote. He wouldn't know what the subject matter was, you know. So I'm basing my observations
on. This is before his old age, he was even struggling.
Part of it, which is fine. Like, if that's what you want for your representative in Delaware, okay. But I just think, you know, and I'm not even, you know, I don't agree with Panetta on a lot of things. In fact, Panetta sits on the board, I believe, of Raytheon. So he's not a good guy, right? But he's smart, intelligent, and that's the difference. You know, Clinton, whom I don't agree with at all and don't support, and I think it's awful what he did to Juanita Broderick, and it was a crime and other things. However, he is intelligent. You can see that, right? Joe Biden, no, he's not. I think he's manipulated very well, but he's not intelligent.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to be right back. My grandpa didn't believe in the stock market. He was a put your money in the bank kind of guy. But Dinesh discovered in the early 1990s that investing in the market makes sense if you're in it for the long term. Problem is, we're in a very rocky economy with lots of craziness at home and lots of instability abroad. There's always a risk of a black swan event, a single event that comes out of nowhere and basically cripples your savings. So how do we take advantage of the upside of the market and protect ourselves against the downside? We need some really good guidance here. My friend Rebecca Walzer is a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. She and her team can help protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. Go to friendofdinesh.com and book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. Again, that's friendofdinesh.com. All right, well, we are back with Tara Reid. Tara, I wanted to get your reaction to this. This is a diary entry from Ashley Biden. The diary has been confirmed as real and authentic. And one of her entries says this. It just says, hypersexualized at a young age. What is this due to? Was I molested? I think so. I can't remember specifics, but I do remember trauma. I remember not liking the Woolzack's house. I remember somewhat being sexualized with Caroline. I remember having sex with friends at a young age, showers with my dad, probably not appropriate. What's your reaction to seeing something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a deeply personal diary entry. So my heart goes out to whoever wrote that. I mean, and obviously they've verified that it's Ashley Biden. I think it's deeply disturbing. I mean, I don't know how anyone could not read that and think that's not deeply disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tragic because for a long time the left tried to, you know, discredit the diary, pretend it wasn't real. That's kind of like what they did with Hunter Biden, try to discredit the laptop and all of this, as opposed to seeing, you know, this is a person in such deep pain. I mean, I feel horrible for Ashley Biden having to go through this. That's so sad. She mentioned, like, even with her sister. And then you think of Hunter. I mean, he's, of course, guilty of crimes, but he's also a disturbed person. His dad wasn't there for him. There was a lot of personal information on the laptop. He struggles with drug addiction and things like that. And so it's really sad to see the left just kind of belittle it and act like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. We're just going to prop up Joe Biden, as opposed to focusing on the, whether it's a sexual assault or mental health. So how did you feel when I saw that you posted on Twitter about how some Democrats are already kind of downplaying your experience? How does that line up with the fact that typically they want to go full force with Me Too or things like that? But then when it comes to something that goes against their narrative, maybe it's a politician like Biden they want to prop up, they then want to immediately discredit the person making the comment.
Well, it's hypocrisy. I mean, you know, but the Democrats have taken that to an art form. So they basically use identity politics like Me Too, like other movements, and use it for their advantage, for the votes, for the money, for the, you know, fundraising, and then discard that movement if it becomes inconvenient for them. But you, as I said to you earlier on, sexual assault is nonpartisan. You know, you mentioned how they're already, Democrats are already trying to dismiss it. Already online, Representative Connolly, I believe from Virginia, the Democrat, basically said, you know, insinuated that I wasn't a reliable witness without ever even talking to me, without ever even knowing me, just on troll rumors, on literally internet trolls. And the Democrats will use the stereotypes about rape myths or whatever to suit them, if it suits them, to discredit the person. And I think, you know, they did that with the Cuomo case. They did that. They're trying to do that with mine regarding children of politicians. Usually the media is off limits with them. So their argument is, you know, the children have nothing to do with this. But the problem is that Joe Biden made his children part of it, right? Because he used them to get favors. And it's obvious by the bank records, there's been some money that's exchanged hands with foreign governments that's been peddling favor. And that's bribery, possibly. These are all possible crimes and they need to be investigated. Are they true or not? Well, there's bank statements. So what does that mean? And that's up to an investigation to further dig in and follow the trail of money and follow what the consequences were. But for sure, anything that tarnishes Joe Biden's harmless grandpa image, but at the same time, he's this, you know, strong leader. If anything tarnishes that, any narrative, it gets shoved down by Democrats because they want to install him for another 4 years. And it's irresponsible. Wow. I think that's my opinion.
Yeah. I also saw the news that you will be testifying before Congress. I saw Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz invited you to do that. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened? And also, I'm so looking forward to you being able to share your story with the nation.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I have asked for this since 2019, 2020. I've said I would go under oath if they would investigate Joe Biden. And nothing has ever happened. One of the misnomers about all of this is like Jen Psaki had gotten up in front of the White House press, you know, and said, this is when she was press secretary. She was asked a question about me and said, oh, that's been litigated. That was absolutely false. And the fact that a representative of the Biden administration made a false and inaccurate statement like that knowingly is really concerning. It's never been investigated. It's never been investigated at all. Paying a PR firm and have been planting media hit articles on me to silence a story is not investigating a crime. Just like the way the Hunter Biden story was suppressed, just like the Ashley Biden, that part was suppressed. All of that was purposely suppressed with money from the media and from the public seeing it. And that is wrong. That is a crime, actually. So, you know, what I would say is that I'm looking forward to testifying in Congress about my experiences in 1993. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at me and try to say all kinds of things. In 2019, they called me a Russian agent. That was the first thing Biden's campaign said was that I was a Russian asset. Then when they couldn't do that, they moved on to saying, well, you know, they class shamed me. Slut shamed me, basically tried everything in the book. And I kept coming forward and saying, none of this has anything to do with the facts of what happened in 1993. And so I hope that in the congressional investigation, I will be given the opportunity to answer all the questions. And I'll answer questions from Democrats. But if they try to deviate or go off the subject, I'm going to remind them that they didn't do that to Dr. Ford, right? Mm-hmm. You didn't see Democrats like asking her about her credentials when she was sexually assaulted. That's ridiculous. Joe Biden wasn't asking me anything like that when it happened in 1993. So, you know, Their switch and bait is kind of their tactics. Hypocrisy is, you know, kind of led them. And you have to understand, I was a Democrat for most of my life. I'm no longer. I'm an independent. But I don't like not just my case, but I don't like what I've seen, the way they've been trying to protect Joe Biden. Also, the way they've targeted Trump supporters and gone after, you know, them in such a horrible way, destroying their lives, holding them in prison, calling them terrorists. I mean, when you enter into politics in a place where you're trying to call your opposition terrorists if they oppose you, we're starting to get into a very dangerous totalitarian, almost fascism regime with the Biden administration, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because when you start suppressing political opposition and censoring speech, we've lost our democracy.
Well, Tara, good luck with the hearing. I'm really looking forward to you doing that, because it is time that Joe Biden be held accountable for these things and for people to actually hear your story. So, Tara, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, sure. Thank you for having me.
Dinesh and Debbie started taking Relief Factor 2 years ago, and the difference they have seen in their joints the past 2 years has been nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation that's the source of aches and pains. The majority of the people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie has been able to do the exercises that for several years she wasn't able to do. It's been a game changer for her, her aunt, other members of her family, and for many other people as well. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself by ordering the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call the new number 1-800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. Feel the difference. Well, that wraps up today's show. Make sure to follow me on social media if you like today's episode. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Truth Social, and Rumble, all the places. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill, and that's where you can find my videos, thoughts, all of those things. I host a show regularly on Epic Times called Counterculture, and I would love to see you guys over there as well. I'll see you all tomorrow.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.